From Washington, this is Daybreak Asia. Good morning, I'm Jim Stevenson. Coming up, Hong Kong government offers negotiations to demonstrators. Afghanistan captures two Haqqani commanders. North Korean defector vows to continue launching leaflet-filled balloons across border. These stories and more in this Friday edition of VOA's Daybreak Asia. Hong Kong's top leader, Leung Chun-ying, said he's looking for ways to resume talks aimed at ending weeks-long pro-democracy protests that has snarled traffic and blocked commerce sections of Hong Kong. Ivan Broadhead reports from the city legislature in Hong Kong that the talks could begin as early as next week.
Speaking at a news conference Thursday, Hong Kong Chief Executive Leung said he could offer no concessions on the 31st of August edict of the Chinese National People's Congress Standing Committee that the 2017 chief executive elections would proceed on the basis of one person, one vote in an election contested only by Beijing-approved candidates.
Politics is the art of the possible, and we have to draw a line between possibilities and impossibilities. The central authorities have said clearly that they will not retract the Standing Committee decision on the 31st of August. And we would like to explore with them what else we can do together so that the 5 million eligible voters in Hong Kong will have the first opportunity in Hong Kong's history to vote in the chief executive in 2017, and this has never happened before.
Mr. Leung's news conference comes a day after the broadcast of a video showing plainclothes police officers beating social worker Ken Zhang, who later showed reporters the scrapes and bruises he says he sustained in the assault. Earlier Thursday, Hong Kong police used pepper spray to disperse protesters who were again trying to block a street near government headquarters. The government views the protests as illegal. Constitutional and Mainland Affairs Secretary Raymond Tam stood alongside Leung. He insisted that few countries in the world allow civic nominations for the office of head of state. He said if progress is not made soon to implement a procedure for the 2017 election, it may be too late to offer one person, one vote, even on the Beijing-approved nominees.
There are many years ahead for our young students. They should not just put all their focus on 2017. If they can just look beyond 2017, maybe many of their aspirations could be addressed in future years. 2017 is not the final stop. It is the beginning of a new chapter for democracy in Hong Kong, and I hope the students will see that next week when we begin our dialogue.
Mr. Leung said he hoped talks with the Hong Kong Federation of Students and other sectors could begin as early as next week. However, the news conference could not quell growing anger at the police brutality directed against pro-democracy demonstrator Ken Zhang. While the officers involved in the beating have this evening been suspended and authorities have promised an investigation, legislator James Toh says 10 Hong Kong district councillors have threatened to quit their posts on a security committee.
It is a very blatant, serious assault, if not a torture act. Very serious act. But till now, there's no arrest. Well, it's very simple. You ask the victim, you're beaten up, yes? There is a very prima facie case for immediate arrest.
Lau Siu Kai, vice president of the influential mainland think tank, the Chinese Association for Hong Kong and Macau Studies, says even if tensions were to ease, he is concerned about the future stability of the Hong Kong government.
Well, I expect more difficulty for the government to govern Hong Kong, particularly after the Occupy movement has ended. We are going to see more confrontation within the legislature. If that's the case, it will be difficult for a government with a very weak authority to really promote long-term policies or to rally public support for its governance.
Meanwhile, British Prime Minister David Cameron said Britain should support the rights of the Hong Kong people, reiterating that democracy must involve real choice in the former British colony. In Washington, State Department spokesperson Jen Psaki said the United States remained in close contact with relevant authorities in both Hong Kong and China. On the streets now, the situation remains calm as democracy campaigners consider the extent to which it is worth moving towards a negotiated settlement to the occupation of Hong Kong. Ivan Broadhead for VOA News, Hong Kong.
Chinese state-run news media say the pro-democracy protests in Hong Kong are backed by the United States. From Beijing, Shannon Van Sant reports. Analysts say it's a charge the Chinese government has made before.
A series of newspaper reports in mainland China say the United States is partly to blame for the demonstrations filling the streets of Hong Kong. The stories say officials from the U.S. government-funded organization, the National Endowment for Democracy, have been meeting with protest organizers. China's foreign ministry spokesperson Hong Lei commented on the allegations. He said Hong Kong is a part of China, and no foreign country has the right to interfere. He urged relevant countries to be prudent with their words and actions and refrain from sending wrong signals. Chinese state-run newspaper reports and editorials have been more explicit. A commentary in the People's Daily said that Louisa Greve, the National Endowment for Democracy's vice president for Asia, Middle East, and North Africa and global programs, met with key people in Occupy Central several months ago to talk about the movement. Hong Kong's Tak Kum Pao newspaper reported that pro-democracy legislators in Hong Kong have received U.S. government money. The report references a netizen who wanted to set up a small business in Hong Kong but was prevented from doing so by the large protesting crowds. The entrepreneur said he had documents that proved U.S. funding for democratic and workers' rights activities. Doug Young, author of a book on Chinese news media called The Party Line, says blaming unrest on the U.S. government is not a new tactic for China.
This is actually quite similar to what happened during the Tiananmen protests in 1989. Afterwards, there were all kinds of reports about sort of black hands. That was the word that was making the rounds back then. It was always a small group of black hands that were manipulating the masses.
Other reports in the People's Daily newspaper accused protesters of trying to stage a color revolution, referencing the peaceful protests that took place in the former Soviet Union. Joseph Chung of Hong Kong's Alliance for Democracy and a professor of international relations at the University of Hong Kong says comparing the Hong Kong protests to the color revolution is a sign the Chinese government is leaving no room for compromise with the protesters.
This is very dangerous because in communist terminology, this means that the relationship between the Chinese authorities and the pro-democracy movement is a contradiction between enemies, meaning that there can be no negotiations, meaning that violent crackdown is justifiable. This has caused a lot of worry among the pro-democracy groups in Hong Kong.
A report in the Beijing Times quotes the director of the Central People's Government's Liaison Office, Zhang Xiaoming, as saying the protests betray the one country, two systems principle and disregard basic law. Chung says students' protests are driven by fears for Hong Kong's future.
But I think a lot of the protesters also feel a strong feeling that we don't want to become just another big city in China like Shanghai. We want to uphold our core values, our lifestyles, our dignity, our basic rights.
The National Endowment for Democracy denies allegations in Chinese state news media of meetings with protest organizers and says Vice President Louisa Greve moderated a panel with democracy advocates last spring. The organization details recipients of its grant money for Hong Kong on its website, which totaled more than $695,000 in 2013. Shannon Van Sant for VOA News, Beijing.
Afghanistan's spy agency announced Thursday it has captured two key commanders of the feared Haqqani network, which is fighting the U.S.-led coalition forces alongside the Taliban. The detainees include a son of Jalaluddin Haqqani, the founder of the insurgent group that U.S. and Afghan authorities believe operates from bases in neighboring Pakistan. Ayaz Ghul reports from Islamabad.
Afghan authorities have identified the two men as Anas Haqqani and Hafiz Rashid, describing their capture as a blow to the Haqqani network's operational and fighting capabilities. A spokesman for Afghanistan's National Directorate of Security, Abdul Hasib Siddiqui, says the arrests were made on Tuesday in Khost province near the Pakistani border. He added that Anas Haqqani was playing a powerful role as the deputy of his brother, Sirajuddin Haqqani, who is the leader of the network. The spokesman says Anas Haqqani was directly involved in operational and strategic decisions of the network and ran its fundraising campaign in Gulf countries, besides overseeing its social media propaganda activities using his special computer skills. The other captured militant, Rashid, is said to be the group's military commander for Kabul and southeastern Afghanistan. Siddiqui alleged that the militant commander was until recently living in Pakistan's Punjab province. He says that Rashid was responsible for identifying the targets for suicide bombers and providing them with logistical support and equipment to carry out suicide attacks in Kabul and eastern Afghan provinces. The Afghan spy agency spokesman went on to allege that 34-year-old Rashid was training and transferring suicide bombers to Afghanistan from the Haqqani network's camps in the Pakistani city of Peshawar and the Waziristan border region. Militant sources, however, claimed the arrests were made by local authorities in the Gulf state of Qatar, who later handed the men over to Afghanistan. The network's founder, Jalaluddin Haqqani, is a former anti-Soviet guerrilla commander and is said to have sidelined himself from operational affairs because of deteriorating health. One of his sons, Nasiruddin Haqqani, was shot dead by unknown assailants in November near Islamabad. He was serving as the network's chief financier. Another son, Badruddin Haqqani, was killed in a U.S. drone strike in North Waziristan in August of 2012. Haqqani sanctuaries in North Waziristan have long strained Islamabad's relations with Kabul and Washington. Speaking this week at the Atlantic Council in Washington, U.S. Special Representative for Afghanistan and Pakistan, Dan Feldman, reiterated the significance of Pakistan's counterterrorism offensive in Waziristan.
The operations clearly disrupted militant activities, but I think we can also all agree that the job is not done. Militant groups, including both the Pakistan Taliban and the Haqqani network, continue to pose a threat to Pakistan, to Pakistan's neighbors, and to the U.S. And it's vital that these operations continue and that every effort is made to prevent the safe havens from being reconstituted.
The Al-Qaeda-linked Haqqani network is blamed for staging some of the deadliest attacks against NATO and Afghan targets from its bases in Pakistan's North Waziristan border region. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
After a group of activists in South Korea recently launched balloons full of leaflets into North Korea, the two sides exchanged gunfire and officials in Pyongyang threatened to cancel talks to improve relations between the two countries. VOA's Brian Padden in Seoul talked to the leader of one of the activist groups launching the balloons, who says that they will continue with their efforts to bring news from the outside world into North Korea, despite threats from the Kim Jong-un regime or even requests from South Korean leaders to cease their activities.
Lee Min-bok, a North Korean defector, and his group, the Campaign for Helping North Korea in a Direct Way, uses balloons to send printed messages, CDs, even little radios to give North Koreans access to uncensored news and information.
The balloon launch is a primitive humanitarian activity for human rights, which opens eyes, ears, and mouths of North Korean people that have been closed by the North Korean regime.
He and other activists in South Korea launched thousands of balloons each year into North Korea, where the news media and access to the internet is strictly controlled. Lee says most of these activities go off undetected, but a recent launch provoked a military exchange of gunfire at the border and increased diplomatic tensions. North Korea, through its state-run television KRT, threatened to both retaliate with further deadly strikes and cancel recently agreed to high-level talks to ease military tensions.
If South Korea truly hopes for resolution in the relationship and high-level dialogue as well, they should respect us and have courtesy first.
Military officials on both sides reportedly met to discuss the incident. South Korea's Unification Ministry spokesman Lim Byung-chul says while they cannot legally prohibit these activities, they will urge the activists to practice restraint.
The government has been calling on the groups to make careful and wise decisions on sending North Korea leaflets due to concerns for people's safety.
Lee says he understands the risks and concerns, but does not plan to stop.
I don't do this for political reasons, and this activity is justified in the spirit of the Constitution. But the activity must be done more quietly.
Lee downplays the likelihood of the balloon launches sparking a military conflict, and he says when the wind conditions permit, he and other activists will do it again. Brian Patton, VOA News, Seoul.
Among the more than 26,000 North Koreans who have fled their country for new lives in South Korea, one refugee is trying to start a career as a hip-hop artist with hopes that his music will eventually make it back to his homeland. From Seoul, reporter Jason Strother has more.
Show Me the Money is a South Korean reality television program that gives aspiring rappers a shot at making it big. And for the first time, a North Korean defector appeared on the program as a contestant.
Show me the money!
He is 28-year-old Kang Chun-hyuk, originally from North Hamgyong Province in North Korea. He grew up there during the famine that is believed to have killed millions. Kang says it is that experience that influences his music. He says he wants to criticize the North Korean government because people there have been starving to death and are desperate, but yet the system has not changed. Kang is currently a student at one of South Korea's top arts universities. He says he only learned about hip-hop after he escaped from the North. There is nothing like rap in North Korea, he says. He remembers listening to South Korean hip-hop for the first time in 1998 when he and his family crossed the border into China. Refugee advocates say for talented North Koreans like Kang, there are not many opportunities back home. That is according to Roland Chi, who is with the Citizens Alliance for North Korean Human Rights, a refugee support group in Seoul.
They've been sort of brainwashed. Any sort of artistic compunction that they have has been stamped out of them, unless it's directed towards glorifying the state of North Korea.
Kang Chun-hyuk says even though he cannot go back across the border, he hopes his music will. South Korean music is already broadcast into the North by defector-run radio stations in Seoul. Jang Song-woo produces the music program Hometown Train on Free NK Radio. He says North Koreans have been listening to South Korean pop music for decades as an alternative to government-sponsored propaganda songs. Jang says on his program, he likes to play lively South Korean music. He usually plays older Korean pop music, but will also play K-pop and rap. Jang adds that he would like to play music performed by other North Korean defectors too, like Kang Chun-hyuk. In this rap, Kang reminds North Korea's rulers that while they were drinking expensive imported alcohol, people like him were eating tree bark and drinking from mud puddles. Those are lyrics that would not go over well with the Pyongyang regime, but Kang says he hopes his music will resonate with many people back home. He says he is not so sure what people in North Korea will think about his songs, but maybe his lyrics could help start a revolution there. Jason Strother for VOA News, Seoul.
It's that time again. Time to look for movies. And today we look at a new Hollywood drama just opening in New York and more widely showing soon. Daybreak Asia's Ray Kugel tells us about this look at the explosive relationship between a young drummer and his tyrannical teacher.
This place is nice.
I really like the music that they play.
It takes a lot of practice and commitment to become a successful musician. Combine the drive to succeed with a mentor who is hell-bent on making you a wreck is the core of an intriguing story playing at the movies. Whiplash is about a 19-year-old student named Andrew Neiman who attends a New York conservatory, aspiring to become a great jazz drummer.
I'm part of Schaefer's top jazz orchestra. It's the best music school in the country.
The key is to just relax. Don't worry about the numbers. Don't worry about what the other guys are thinking.
You're here for a reason. Have fun.
Five, six, and.
I want to be great.
And you're not.
Got Buddy Rich here.
Little trouble there.
You're rushing. Here we go.
His dreams turn into a nightmare when he must play under a band conductor who is more than a perfectionist. Terrence Fletcher is a human buzzsaw of anger, threats, and insults.
Five, six, and.
Were you rushing or were you dragging?
I don't know.
If you deliberately sabotage my band, I will gut you like a pig.
Demanding so much from the young drummer, he makes his hands bleed. To call this tough love is an understatement.
You are a worthless pansy ass who is now weeping and slobbering all over my drum set like a 9-year-old girl.
You don't have to play a musical instrument to understand what it is like to have a teacher so domineering and frightening that you begin to question your own sanity and wonder whether it's all really worth it. Whiplash takes the wonderful world of jazz to confront what could happen when humiliation is a teacher's way of getting the best out of you.
I push people beyond what's expected of them. I believe that is an absolute necessity.
I want to be one of the greats. And because I'm doing that, it's going to take up more of my time. And this is why I don't think that we should be together.
I would never let him put my son through hell. Why would you let him get away with what he did to you?
There are no two words in the English language more harmful than good job.
Psychological and emotional issues are sure to pop up. Miles Teller plays the student, and J.K. Simmons is the maestro, one of those character actors whose face you've seen for years, but name you don't know. That's bound to change with this performance. Simmons, with his bald head, seems even fiercer as he doles out brutal instruction in an acting turn sure to bring Oscar consideration.
I mean, I know I'm in competition with other actors, and I'm hoping, you know, honestly, the attention from this movie helps me get offers for other parts in the future that might otherwise go to other guys, you know?
Writer-director Damien Chazelle's Whiplash is a feature-length adaptation of his 18-minute short film, which played to great acclaim at the Sundance Film Festival in 2013. This longer version also hit the jackpot, picking up the 2014 Audience Award and Grand Jury Prize at Sundance.
The orchestra can't exist without the drummer. That's the root base of all of it. But I think also, I also wanted to paint a portrait of a really hyper-competitive world, a world where everyone is sort of out for their own skin.
Whiplash is getting a good deal of critical acclaim. Variety says the film demolishes the cliches of the musical prodigy genre. The Hollywood Reporter praises Teller's performance as more simmering than volatile. That's just the right accompaniment, no musical pun intended, for its praise of Simmons, described, like many a good villain, utterly compelling. IndieWire calls Whiplash full of bravado and swagger. It's sure to be a crowd pleaser. I'm Ray Kugel.
Whiplash will be opening this month in South Korea, Hong Kong, Thailand, Australia, and New Zealand. Ray Kugel will next appear with another movie review in 1 week right here on Daybreak Asia. The drumbeat of the latest world news rolls on. Steve Norman has it with International Edition next. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us today on Daybreak Asia.
Special English, a way to learn American English and much more. Broadcasting a half hour of world news and features every day on radio. You can also find Special English on television and online at voaspecialenglish.com for 50 years, helping people understand world events and the language and culture of America.